What we have found, you know, from putting online is that the majority of the people coming to the thing are not developers. That constitutes somewhere between like 60-70% of our audience. So we went from, you know, 0.7 million in ARR to, you know, 20.7 in like 2 months. But if I say, just say like make a clone of Spotify, right? And now it's just like going to get to work. This is a full operating system that just booted.
It literally looks like a fully fledged version of Spotify, single shot in like literally 30 seconds. That's so wild.
You can just keep prompting and be like, actually have the player controls work and play an MP3 or whatever, and it'll do it.
Eric, I'm super excited for this conversation. Thanks for being here and chatting with us. I think people maybe know this, maybe don't know this, but I think like Bolt looks like this overnight success of like, oh, there's this new startup that's been, has this super cool new product where you can put in text and have it generate an app. But y'all have actually been on this sort of the startup grind for a very long time. And I'm curious to just give the like really high level cliff notes of like how you got to today where like all of a sudden it feels like this magical moment where everything is taking off.
Yeah. The way we kind of phrased it is like, it's like an overnight success, 7 years in the making, you know? We started the company. I mean, the kind of the mission and the vision of the thing has really been the same, since we started the company. And, I started this company with one of my, childhood best friends. He and I learned how to code together. We've been building stuff together ever since. And we want to make it as easy for people to build like full stack web applications as it is to use Canva for design or Figma or something like that. And so having it be, you know, naturally browser based, you can crack open a browser tab, build out like a real web app, not just like a site builder, drag and drop type thing, but like actual like real software that, you know, even if you're a software developer, you can, you know, fork it and hack on it, like using React or like whatever framework, and be able to actually allow people to create great products on the web or on mobile devices and that sort of thing. And, you know, we spent the first 7 years of the company, like building the technology and kind of some core products around it that allow you to like do web development in a browser. And the big challenge was just, we couldn't get developers loved it just for like playing around with it and prototyping or whatever, but to use it for like meaningful work, you know, it gave people out of their local environments, just like every other cloud IDE has found out. Huge challenge. But everything changed when we had the idea, hey, what if we kind of took this frontier AI stuff and made a text to app, you know, sort of experience basically. And that's what Bolt.new is. And that completely changed everything for us. Like, you know, to kind of put in context, like at the end of last year, like we were getting ready to like spin down the company. Because we were, you know, like we had money in the bank, but it, you know, it's like at some point as a venture backed company, you gotta have venture backable returns. And I think our ARR at that point, after, you know, I think 4 or 5 years of kind of trying to crack monetization, I think it was like 600-700K or something. And which we like, we've hard fought revenue, but, you know, just nowhere close to what it needed to be. And then, you know, so in October we launched Bolt, and then, so we went from, you know, 0.7 million in ARR to, you know, 20.7 in like 2 months and didn't shut down the company. We felt it was probably good to keep the thing going at that point. And yeah, we've just been kind of growing ever since.
I love that. And really quickly, just as a follow-up, what, like, how do you think long-term now about, you know, if you had to go do it all over again, like, do you think the, like, what was the like first 4 or 5 years of like learning the hard lessons, fighting for that first few $100,000 in ARR, like a valuable from either like a product development perspective or like learning what, or did like the AI ecosystem just like kind of like completely change the earth that you were standing on? And like, it's actually like almost chapter 2 of Stacklets, chapter 2 of Bolt. And like, it's an entirely different company at this point than what you were building before.
It's a really good question. And the short answer is like, I'm so glad that we spent so much time doing all that, because I mean, like the core experience of Bolt, like we created this technology called Web Container that, you know, that was the core bet of the company. It was like, hey, we can build this, like write an operating system from scratch in WebAssembly that can run inside of your browser tap and, you know, boot environments like 100 milliseconds. And the reason that's important is like, if you look at every other productivity app that's come to the web, like Figma, Google Docs, all of them use your end CPU and GPU to do the compute work. Like that was the key innovation that allowed Figma to bring design to the browser, was like this custom WebGL based rendering engine they made. And so we saw the same story starting to play out in 2017 for web development environments. And so that technology, like when you go to Bolt and you say, hey, make me, you know, a personal website or whatever, 100 milliseconds after you hit enter, there's an operating system booted on your page. And if you compare that, and like I think why Bolt has had a very strong commercial pull and like reception by folks, is like if you compare this against the other experiences out there, how this works, if you're going to do cloud based IDE stuff, is you have to spin up a VM for every single user, for every single project they're using. And so if you want to build a service that's going to scale to like, let's just say 10 million people, right? You need like at a minimum 10 million VMs that are going to be getting spun up, spun down. And it, so then you're dealing with latency because every keystroke has to be synced to the server, synced back. Someone's got to pick up the cost of that. So usually that's the end user. You got to put in a credit card to even try the thing. And often the free tiers have to get nerfed because you have people that are going and installing Bitcoin miners on them or using them to like DDoS things. So anyways, so that's like, there would be no Bolt without the 5+ years of core technology investment we made in Web Container. And then the other things you were mentioning too, around like our ability to, we had to like, our previous monetization attempts were around like enterprise sales and we had to figure out how to build like a go-to-market engine, kind of from scratch. And we were building out a community and a brand the whole time. It's like when we launched Bolt, we only put out a tweet. Like we didn't have a blog post. We didn't like have a press article. It was like a tweet. But we had built up enough of an audience of folks like that loved the stuff we made. And thought we were cool or whatever, that when we put it out there, it just kind of caught like wildfire. And we've had learned all of these lessons of how to build, very strong, tight-knit communities and how to actually, do effective go-to-market motions. We were just, I think, a really good job on a lot of this stuff. The key problem was just we didn't have a product offering that was like, that had a really clear commercial product market fit, right? And now that we have that, all the playbooks we've been building for years here are, we can pull them off the shelves, applying them, staffing them, and they're working like insanely well. So like to kind of like 100%, it was extremely difficult to kind of go, just grind for 7 years straight on this stuff and be looking down the barrel, shutting the thing down. But when the time really came for us to scale this thing up, I don't think we, if this had happened in like year two of the company, we would have screwed a lot of things. There's so much stuff that was going wrong through all the past 6 months of this thing or whatever that I think would have been insurmountable or would have, we've gotten hamstringed, So that's the short and the long version of the answer to your question.
Eric, I'm curious if you have metrics or if you're able to distinguish how many folks who are using Bolt are truly have like no technical, no engineering experience, that are basically just coming in leveraging it kind of like a ChatGPT. I do think we were talking about how you have to give your GitHub repository access perhaps. So maybe there's that extent of barrier of entry, but do you have a pulse on kind of those metrics?
Yeah, from what we see, and this was like, prior to Bolt, like 99% of our users or something like that, maybe 95 plus or something like that, coming to stackblitz.com, our web-based IDE, we're developers. Like we were a developer product. And so we kind of expected to see the same, when we put Bolt out. But what we found from putting it online is that the majority of the people coming to the thing are not developers. They are PMs, they are designers, they're entrepreneurs, et cetera. And that's like, that constitutes somewhere between like 60-70% of our audience, with the remainder of that being, like developers, right, in the 30-40. And that was kind of a mind-blowing thing for us, because in the first weeks it was online, we were kind of responding to the support tickets that were coming in, because again, this is designed to be a developer product, so they're asking a lot of developers, what is this error code? And we're like, aren't you a developer? and we started like talking to these folks and we were like, okay, this is kind of weird. Like there's like PMs using, it's kind of cool. Like, and then we just kept seeing more and more of it. And then seeing these people building like real software. Like this guy built a CRM that had AI integrated with it, with Stripe billing and like making money off of you know, in the first 3 weeks. And there's like a whole bunch of those. And that's, you know, we started to kind of piece together like, okay, this is actually enabling an entirely new category of people to like build real software that they have always been great at building products. Like that's the thing, is like PMs, designers, entrepreneurs, they're great at like envisioning products and the small details of them to like make the experience excellent. It's just like previously the only way for them to actually get those ideas into actual coded software is through the fingertips of a developer. And now with Bolt, they're putting their own fingertips into a keyboard, and you know, our agent is writing the code for them and able to iterate, you know, prompt after prompt, right? And that blew our minds. And that's you know, I think just the biggest realization we'd had through this thing, we were like, okay, this is a big deal. I think, you know, this is we're kind of at the ground zero of like how the world builds software is about to get completely reorganized, you know? And so, yeah.
And how has this like materially changed the vision from a product perspective? Like, are you now like trying to like, cause I was just using Bolt today actually. And like, you know, it still feels very much like a lot of the things, a lot of the information that surface sort of assumes you're a developer in some cases. It's talking about NPM installing packages and certain error messages. So, like, how much do you think the vision over time will transition more to not surfacing a lot of the detail that like developers would historically be acquainted with?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think today, like it's an interesting balance that we have to toe with it. Because like exactly what you're saying, where there are still a lot of like for developers in the product, you can edit the code of the thing, right? You have access to the terminal if you want to like take over from the AI and that sort of thing. And I think what we've done well so far is that like, you know, AI Codegen has definitely hit a point now where, you know, with Sonnet 3.5 in particular is like the first model that could, you know, you give it tasks and you can reliably get output that is, you know, where the ROI is extremely clear. Because before that, there is, you know, you would run into a lot of errors and stuff. It zero shot, this thing might, these previous models wouldn't actually give you a running working app without bugs that, you know, was beautiful and like whatever. That's no longer the case. And like, and all the labs, you know, are pushing the limits of this, and it's only going to get better. And so I think as the kind of core capabilities of, you know, I think the models get better and it's like, okay, these things don't tend to make these types of mistakes. I think we're going to begin removing things from the product or at least have them extremely non-visible to the user, right? Unless they really need to go in and dig into stuff. And that's kind of our philosophy on those. Like until we have sufficient conviction that, you know, this, the accessing the terminal, for example, is something you'll never have to do, right? It's like, it should probably stay. Maybe something that, you know, someone who's like a PM or, you know, like a non-technical sort of person or whatever would just like ignore or something. And that just might, you know, eventually go away, you know? But it's kind of an interesting challenge because the best analogy I've kind of found for this is it's like we're building like a power drill. You know, it's something that like if you go to most American homes, like the people have like a power drill. You know, like my mom used one to like put up a baby gate for us the other day. But you go to a construction site and like they've got the same DeWalt power drill where they're like, you know, these are professionals using this. And so I think that there's something there around, you know, having like this universally powerful tool that in the hands of like someone who is an expert in the thing and also someone who's like, you know, a armchair at home expert, right? It's extremely useful to both of them. I think that's kind of the line where we want to be. We don't want to be on either side of the thing at this point in time, at least. We want to build something that, you know, if you want to learn more and become an expert, it's still extremely useful there. Or if not, it's also still, you know, very useful.
I would say off that too, is there a world where, again, you have someone who's really good with the idea side of things, someone who's really good at executing. I go on to Bolt, you know, create that first prompt, get something up and running, realize that, hey, again, I'm not a developer. I don't understand how to solve some of these bugs. You know, basically turning Bolt into a marketplace. If you're a developer, here are tools you can work on or projects you can work on. If you're good at go to market, here are some opportunities that companies are being worked on. Here's your opportunity to kind of step in and do that. That's kind of where my head went originally. Because again, I had one of the questions down was, you know, I think code only gets you so far. Any successful business, you need marketing, you need a go-to-market strategy, you need to understand the community. So yeah, it's curious for folks who come in who have none of that experience and then turn around and be like, all right, you know, I have something. How do I keep it sustainable and make sure that every step leading forward, you know, is able to be accomplished? So that was more so just a thought. But I'm curious on a question, and I was reading something too, and I believe, you know, Bolt was able to hit 20 million ARR with a team of 15. So I think it emphasizes how you're seeing the shift from large corporations, you know, basically battling now with some of these smaller, more lean startups that are, you know, maybe more agile, easier to make decisions. Just curious, you know, what your thoughts have been with your team of 15 and how you think that's actually allowed you to grow much faster than maybe some of your competitors or large organizations trying to do something similar.
Really good question. It's kind of from the get-go with, you know, like we started the company in like 2017. I think we raised like our first seed round like 2019 and kind of brought in the initial, the founding engineers, there's like five or six people that have been around since like 2019, 2020. And it just have stuck here for five plus years together. Cause everyone believed in the vision and just loved working on the technology. And we're having fun doing it. And, you know, so Albert and I, my co-founder and I, the company we did before this, we actually bootstrapped it from scratch. And we got the idea for StackBits from that company. It's called Thinkster. We were teaching kind of the cutting edge of web development online. Think like a Pluralsight or Lynda sort of model. You like pay a subscription, access content. And for us, it was like a lifestyle business. Like we were, you know, very small, but you know, at the peak we had like, I don't know, I think 100,000 people a month that were like taking our courses or whatever. And the biggest problem was like people had trouble setting up their dev environments. And we had that, we kind of, you know, we were teaching the cutting edge of what browsers can do. And we were like, hey, you know what? Like, it should be possible to like run, you know, create an operating system that runs in the browser, like run Node.js on top of that and run all these tool chains. And that was kind of where the idea came from. But the lessons we had learned doing that, you know, kind of bootstrapped startup together, just, you know, him and I, we really learned how far you can stretch a dollar. And, you know, like, and we were, it was like, you know, we started that thing in like 2013, 2014, I think. And, we were trying different startup ideas on and off, you know, for years. And that was, Thinkster was kind of the one that was kind of keeping us, you know, paying our rent mostly, and keeping us afloat. And you know, we were like, it was like, you know, we were living month to month on the thing. And so we learned like, you know, just how much you can do and how many things you can not pay for and, you know, et cetera, and how much more, you know, how just the leverage you can have as a small team, like, you know, with less people and just more contacts per head. As we went, when we were doing StackBlitz and you started hiring on the team, we kept the team really small. And this was, you know, coincided with kind of the mania of 2020, 2021. And so at that time, it was very popular to go and like hire, you know, 50 people, you know, in a quarter or whatever. And I mean, we didn't do that. We were just like, this just doesn't seem, you know, like this doesn't seem like it's gonna be the right thing to do, both from just like a burn rate perspective, but also like there's so much overhead with, you know, adding so many more people if you're not like bursting at the seams where you need them, right? And that had just really paid off really well for us. And now it's like a lot more, that it was contrarian then. I think now it's like, it's kind of becoming the accepted like wisdom of like, you want fewer people with more contacts per head, largely because people have more agency to like go and do things. And that you don't have to like go and schedule a meeting with five different people over the course of a week to kind of get enough context and like approval to do things. You know what I mean? So, that's absolutely key, you know, for getting us to where we are now. And like, as Bolt was in the first 2 months of Bolt scaling, every day there was just different challenges that were, you know, running out of GPUs to run this stuff on, running out of, you know, like our servers were, you know, getting, you know, slammed. Like there's missing features in the product and you know, people having full context of how everything worked, they were able to just go and end-to-end solve this stuff, right? I think it is reflected kind of in the results of the company so far of like, you know, how quickly we've been able to you know, scale and like meet the demand as best as we can. Like we're not perfect. I think we just hit like you know, over 80% of our, you know, SLA of, you know, when people send us an email with same day response. I mean, it's taken months for us to get into the 80 percentile, just because we have, like, now we're like 20 something people. And, you know, we've got the, you know, 60,000 paying customers plus or something. And so it's just like, you know, three support people. You know, it's just the kind of the leverage of scale. It's incredibly that we're even hitting 80 with like three people doing support, you know? But anyways, that's kind of like, there is something really, really powerful about having fewer people though, being able to connect the dots faster and have way more effective solutions than, at a fraction of the cost, and you're able to be a lot more agile, you know? And that's been a key part of what I think has allowed us to scale to the point where we're at now.
Yeah. And to riff off of Nolan's, meta comment about, sort of how to help people go the next step. Like, I think today Bolt does a really great job of like getting you to the MVP of the product or the idea that you have in mind. In a world where sort of the cost to go from idea to working prototype to maybe even like the fully fleshed out product, like basically goes down to zero. Like, what's your sort of meta observation as someone who's like actually in the driver's seat of making that trend happen, as far as like what, like how is the value creation aspect going to change in the future? Cause I think historically, like actually building the thing was like at least 50% of the challenge of like making a successful company or business or something. And I think, yeah, that cost seems like it's going down significantly. So where do you think, is it like distribution or like great marketing or like, what, how do you think people are going to win in the future from that lens?
Yeah, I think that if everyone kind of has the capability to like ship great products faster, right. It's, you know, I think certainly if anyone is hesitant to adopt those sorts of tools in a meaningful way, that's always like, there's always kind of that opportunity of incumbents being displaced by the upcomers. Typically, you know, like that's typically, I feel like, not completely the case. And so I think like existing brands, you know, existing companies are serving these products. If you look on Twitter, there's people that are like, all the incumbents are dead, you know? And then on the other hand, it's like, no, like everyone's dead. Like, you know, it's just like, you see these extremes, right? And I feel like the reality is going to be somewhere in the middle where, you know, the things that you can compete on are going to be like amazing, you know, customer support and service and, you know, a brand and certainly things like distribution, et cetera. I mean, an interesting corollary to this maybe is like kind of what we've seen happening with, you know, large influencers launching their own brands, right? Which has been kind of an inch. I don't know how I personally feel about it, but it's like, it's interesting to see, like, you know, you have YouTubers that you know, have enough of a presence where they're launching, you know, like a Gatorade competitor that's actually doing damage to these existing incumbents. So I kind of look at that and it's like, this may actually just further enable those sorts of trends that we're already seeing, right? Net, I think for consumers, that just kind of tends to be a good thing because you end up with just more competition, with people competing on, you know, whether it's a better brand or vision of the future, right? I think in the case of influencers or whatever. But often it's under, you know, the ones that are most successful, they're backed by really great products and services that, where they're innovating kind of beyond what the other alternatives are doing, you know? And so I think that's what's, it opens up new opportunity for competition that to your point would have been really expensive and really risky. You know, where, you know, people want to, you know, been able to really go and meaningfully compete, I think, you know? I think it's something like that. That's my best take at least.
Yeah. And just to take this sort of two steps further, perhaps, like, do you think like the customer service example, like how much, like in the maybe 2 to 3 year roadmap, like is solving that problem for people who are using Bolt, like part of like your mental model of like where you'll evolve into, where like, hey, you're already making your app here. Like, why don't we just also like help use AI to do like spin up your marketing channels and like use AI to help you with customers? Like, do you think you'll go after like the full stack of like, actually like company creation rather than just like here where the artifact we're creating is code that lives on a server somewhere?
It's an interesting idea. Yeah. Cause like it's, I think, yeah, I mean, ultimately I could see us kind of going that route, you know, if it makes sense for, you know, I think if it makes sense for like the sort of use cases people are coming to us for, and, it's like, and there's a lot of commonalities of people trying to, you know, launch, you know, like launch SaaS businesses of a certain type, where there could be more provided from our end than just, hey, let's build your website and kind of get you hooked up with Stripe or whatever. Yeah, we actually have like, I think like 2 weeks ago, we announced we have a program called like Bolt Builders, and you can kind of think of it like the Genius Bar, you know, at an Apple store, but for Bolt. Because what happens is the use cases y'all are describing are basically kind of dead on of what we see a lot of people in our support inboxes. They'll, you know, like folks that are not technical will hit some bug and they're like, I've been working on this and you know, I've gotten so much to work and there's this one thing I need to get unblocked on. And so we were testing out just having, you know, different folks just jump on a call with them and see if they could fix it. And sure enough, there's a lot of success. And so we're rolling out this program where like in Bolt, you'll be able to kind of click a button and be connected with someone live to just like help you with your project or whatever. And like, you know, pay them by the hour, by the minute or whatever. And we thought the same thing across the other stuff where it's like, also, how are you going to market this product? You know, how are you going to, you know, get distribution for it? And like thinking through those things. And so we kind of think like the builder program could be like a marketplace for a lot of different types of things. And perhaps it'll be augmented by some type like a marketing agent or like a, you know what I mean? But, you know, I think it definitely strikes me. We're still at a point though, where it's like humans are kind of just more important than ever. We're now just at a point where folks can like specialize on punching in on problems that are just actually intellectually difficult, right? That LLMs are not great at, you know? I think that's cool. Cause it's like, I like working on the interesting stuff, not the boring repetitive stuff personally, you know what I mean? So
it's interesting. Cause it sounds like the two takeaways is one is community. And I feel like we hear that over and over again. You know, if you have a community, you can sell them anything. It sounds like even through your endeavors before Bolt, you're able to build up that following so that when you had a product that, you know, kind of matched or fit the niche, boom, you have the people right there. But also the aspect of having customer success as a competitive advantage is interesting, because I know I just had issues with Xfinity the other day and I'm going through the AI thing. I was getting so upset. And I was like, if I just had someone call, I was literally thinking, I was like, do I just cancel my subscription and go move to a competitor? Because I was so upset with it. So very interesting. But my question, and I'm curious to get your feedback on this. We've asked a few different people and I feel like the answers vary, but with Bolt, you know, there's obviously this ideology around prompt engineering and how you talk to models and how that affects your output and using it too. You know, I played around with it, trying to do myself, putting in the ChatGPT, saying, give me a prompt based on this idea that I can put into, you know, a solution or a system like Lovable, Bolt, whatever the case is. What are your thoughts on prompt engineering and what is the importance for people who use your platform to understand the importance of the prompt so that it's giving them outputs that are actually what they're looking for rather than continuing to hit these roadblocks or barriers as far as like, all right, screw this, you know, I'm not getting what I want. Very curious to hear your kind of perspective on that.
Yeah. I think us and a lot of these Gen AI tools, I mean, this is the challenge where, I mean, they're inherently non-deterministic, right? Like if you go to Gmail, you can write and Google has this, they have a support center that tells you every possible thing you can do in Gmail, right? Like if you want to write an email and like add an attachment, like there's a docs page that tells you how to do that. The problem with this stuff is like, I mean, you know, the frontier labs find out new things these can do from people pushing the limits of them, you know, like, so like within a week or two of us launching Bolt, like we were no longer the experts on how to use the tool. The people that are adopting it and using it knew more than us. You know, kind of interesting is like the people that are the most effective at using Bolt, we found are people that do have to like their day-to-day job or now, or at some point, was interacting with developers, like PMs, entrepreneurs. Reason being is their job is to break down, like I think of a job of a PM, it is to break down, you know, building a product into concrete steps and tickets, you know, that, you know, it would normally go into Jira or whatever. But now they're putting them into this thing and hitting enter. And, you know, so I think a lot of what we're doing is like, we spent a lot of time, we have like live streams, we're bringing people on, but we're bringing some of these folks on full time, just to go and one, make educational content so that people can go and like learn how to prompt and like, and really kind of like learn how to become a good PM effectively. Like that's a lot of the stuff is just, you know, kind of the basics of project product management. And then the second thing is like under the hood, how can we actually, how can you even make the agent better at translating things from, you know, you just vibe prompting to, like a PRD, right? Like how can you kind of like, how can you maybe even abstract some of this where if the user's not being as specific as like a PM might be or whatever, how can you kind of like make it, you know, just work, quote unquote. So I think those are kind of the two areas, you know, and the education is a more long tail thing. And like the more vibe coding thing is, you know, I think really fits a lot of casual users, more like if you look at people that buy DSLRs, I would wager most DSLRs are used by folks that, know the three settings, you know, on the thing, like me and I just like take photo and like, I have one lens or whatever. Right. And then there's people that just continue to go deeper and actually learn how to do, you know, extremely sophisticated photography, you know? And so I think it's like, it, again, like it's one of these power tools where it's like, we want to cater to both. And DSLRs, the way you solve that is education, right? Like how do you better learn how to use this tool? Like you learn. And so the question is, where do you go to learn? Right. And for us, we're spinning up a whole bunch of different programs and free online things, you know, to do that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Eric, we were chatting off camera before this about something that I appreciate about the Bolt experience relative to a lot of generative AI products is really that you, there's not a lot of friction to like get this magical experience. And I think there's so many products where like you need to like suspend disbelief that like this thing is actually going to work and solve your problem. And like Bolt, you can just do your prompt and like sign in with your account. And like you all of a sudden, like I see this incredible proof of work that you all are doing for me, for free as a new user to the product. And I'm curious just like how much, yeah, like what your reaction is to that, but also like how much you think this is like the new product paradigm for a lot of these AI products in today's world. Like, do you think that's actually like been a disproportionate reason also of like why you all have been successful?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it comes down to like the, at least for Bolt, right? The speed in which you can get a actual project built and spun up is so fast, largely again because of the technology we've been working on for the past 7 years that lets us run this operating system in your browser, because it doesn't cost us anything tangibly, right? To spin up an environment inside of your browser tab. Like there's zero, it's like a 0.000 something 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 dollar cost to us, right? To do that, CDN bandwidth. And what that means is like, we can give this away like candy. The only thing that costs us money is like the inference. And for like the first prompt, it's like, I don't know, like we're talking, I don't know, cents or something, you know, it's like, it's low enough where, you know, you can sign in with your email, you know, for free and type in a prompt, hit enter. And, it, you know, there's no cost consideration. So we don't nerf it in any way, but also because it's running locally, there's zero latency, right? And so I can kind of show like, I feel like it's like, maybe I can show like a one shot prompt here of the thing, just to kind of like explain what I'm talking about. But like, yeah, this is Bolt. Like, this is like, let's just call, I'll sign out. We'll take this from, you know, like what it looks like, you know, if you're coming here for the first time, but I can, you know, this is it. Like one thing I love about this, by the way, is just like, there's no marketing. There's no marketing landing page. You know, it's just simple. It's like a text box. You enter it in. We got a couple of options you can click if you want. But if I say, just say like, make a clone of Spotify, right? And I'm going to, you know, hit enter. It's going to say, hey, do you want to sign up or sign in? I'll click sign in. It's signing me in with GitHub. I'm signed in. And now it's just like going to get to work. Again, it's kind of easy to miss what just happened here, but like, this is a full operating system that just booted. Right. This is available. It's installed all the dependencies. It's, you know, right now it's just writing the code, but I can actually like type commands in here, et cetera. You know, within 100 milliseconds of us getting the, you know, the first request back, you know, from the LLM, this thing's ready to rock and roll. And, you know, it's going and making a Spotify clone, which this is like pretty sophisticated. This might take, you know, like 30 seconds or something, but you know, it's going, and you know, we have a full file system, et cetera. And this is, if you kind of have tried other things like that, this can take minutes just to spin up the dev environment, much less write all the stuff into it and actually get a response. So I'll go ahead and pop this open, and let me go full screen on this guy. So no images on it, but I mean,
this is crazy. This is crazy for folks who aren't watching, and are listening audio, go to YouTube and check out the video. Like, it literally looks like a fully fledged version of Spotify, single shot in like literally 30 seconds. That's so wild.
It's crazy, right? It's absolutely, it's bonkers. Like what you can do with this thing. And then you can just keep prompting and be like, and you can say like, okay, like actually have the player controls work and play an MP3 or whatever. And it'll do it. So that's, again, it really comes down to like the technology we made. This is exactly what we designed Web Container to do, was just on page load. And by the way, like, let's say something goes wrong with my dev environment. This happens all the time, you know, and on other providers or cloud IDs or whatever, when something goes wrong with the VM, the way you find out is because you can't do anything. Everything's frozen because like there, you know, there's some process that's gone, you know, ARI or whatever. The cool thing is like any other web app, I'm sure everyone's experienced this, like, you know, the browser's not responding, whatever, something's like being wonky. The way you get back to a fresh state is you hit the refresh button. And that's the exact same thing with WebContainer. It has already booted a fresh operating system from scratch, installed the dependencies, and now it's booting up the dev server again. And, you know, 10 seconds later, we're back at a completely fresh state, right? And so it's like, from a reliability perspective, this is huge. You know, and that's to do this at scale. Again, if you look at the prior art on this, this is how Google Docs serves a billion people or whatever, you know, every month. It's how Figma serves hundreds of millions of people. It has to be done locally where you can, the user is in control of saying, I'm going to refresh the page if this is not working, you know? So that's, you know, key to kind of what allows us to give away this experience on a very permissive free tier and have a very consistent experience, right, when you're using the thing, you know?
Yeah, and just one quick follow-up on this, as you look through the UI experience today, how much is like, can you talk about the deployment story? Like, as somebody, like, you get this magical experience, like the next step for users is like, they want to go and share this really cool thing with their family member or their friend or their partner, whoever it is. Like, what does that story look like today for Bolt?
Yeah. Totally. So we've got this integration with Netlify. And normally like getting all this stuff set up is like a huge, it's a huge pain, like kind of whether you're a developer or not, it's like, you have to get all this stuff glued together. And so we have integrations with Netlify for deployment and Supabase for database functionality. And it's like as simple as just clicking this deploy button up here. I think you can actually just say like deploy this and, you know, the agent will actually do it for you too. It'll actually go ahead and do a production build of this project. And so you actually look over here again, this is because it's running on my own computer. We can allow you to do this for free. It's not costing us money to do this production build. And it uploaded that to Netlify. And so now we have a dedicated URL here where I can go and share this with you all, and you can open it up and, crack it open. And if you want to have like a .com, like if we wanted to say like spotifyclone.com and have this thing show up, I can just click this link, and then that would take me to Netlify, where I can then go and add a domain, point it at it. And then from there on out, you can actually prompt Bolt, have it deploy, and it'll update that .com, you know, domain automatically. Right. So it's like to an end user, like my mom, who's 73, built and deployed her first website, like, you know, a couple months ago with this thing, you know, cause it's, if you compare this against, you know, site builders and stuff like Wix or Squarespace, I mean, those things are complicated actually. You know, like I used one to make my wedding website, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And it was, you know, there's like, it's supposed to be for like people that are like less tactical than me. It's like, they are complicated. Those, you know, the interfaces, and you compare that against this, which is just like a text box, you know, and that, so we see a lot of people making wedding websites, you know, making, you know, for like events and, you know, things of that nature, just because it's so much faster and cheaper, you know, than a lot of things out there.
It is truly insane. Again, as a user too, I was so surprised and shocked by how easy it truly was. Eric, I do have to ask a question though. Obviously there's Bolt, you see create X, Y, and Z, lovable, replit, you know, what truly do you think makes Bolt stand apart, or, you know, what is the competitive advantage? Why is it better?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think everyone should try these things. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's important to like try them for yourself or whatever have you, but like, this is the fastest thing you're going to find, again, because of the way the compute works. We're the only people on the planet that are doing it this way. And it's not locked down to like, this is just an operating system. You can run anything. This can do React or Svelte or Vue or anything, right? Like one thing we just recently launched was mobile apps with Expo. So you can just like say, build me a mobile app, you know, and it uses React Native. And so you look at these other things, when you try them out, the experience tends to be pretty slow. If they're using VMs, the reliability is also very tough to do with VMs. And the interfaces that you get to these things can tend to be complicated, right? If it looks like something that's like more of like an IDE, because I mean, even in this case, you know, a lot of the non-tech people that use the product, what's going on here kind of looks like the Matrix, and then it flips over to the thing that they actually care about, right? You really don't need to know what's going on there unless you really are jammed on something and can't figure out what to do with it. Most people are just are seeing it, editing the code and flipping back, and they're like, great, this looks awesome. You know what I mean? So I think we found from a user experience perspective, I think we're doing a good job finding the line of like allowing developers to, hey, if I do want to go edit the code and, you know, go in the terminal, whatever, I can do that, right? If I am not a developer, I also can ignore that and just focus on the actual application being built, you know? So I think that's the mixture of things that's allowed Bolt to just, you know, by DAUs and ARR and like whatever, it's like, I think that's why we're seeing, you know, a lot of pickup comparatively to some of the other stuff here, you know?
Yeah, Eric, I love that. Something that I've been talking to a lot of people about as of late is like these three lines on a curve. Like on one hand, there's like the cost of AI going down into the right, and it's come down like 99.9% over the last couple of years. There's also the consumer awareness, or just like the general public's awareness of AI and their interest in AI, like going up into the right. And then there's actually like sort of directly tied to that in parallel is the consumer willingness to spend on AI going up and to the right. And I'm curious, like how much, perhaps like a two-part question, like one, like how much of your job at this point is like, you have this magic, you just need to go and like tell people that they can actually do this. Cause like so many people have no idea that this type of product experience is even possible. But also like, what's your reaction to that at sort of the meta level? Like, does that track as far as like why Bolt has been able to have this sort of explosive revenue growth and user growth that you've been seeing?
Yeah, I think you're dead on. You're dead. I think that's the first time I've heard someone lay it out so clearly, actually. But especially around like the bit you just said of most people are not aware of that this is possible. Like that is actually, that's what we're finding. It's just, and so coming back to like the importance of having a really good go-to-market team is like, a lot of the challenge is just getting the word out, you know? I think like having a very community oriented, like for us, like it's been just organic word of mouth. Like we have spent like nothing, like we've done zero paid acquisition. And like, you know, it's like purely been word of mouth growth. Right. But like you look at, you know, like we have like, you know, a million people a month or something using this thing at this point. You know, like that should be like 100 million, you know, it's like, that's how do you kind of grow the awareness to that level? Right. That's the stuff that we're, you know, that we're spending a lot of time, you know, going and doing experiments on and hiring for and thinking about, et cetera, you know? Cause yeah, it's definitely the knowledge is not evenly distributed that this is possible, you know?
Why not do paid ads though? Like, I feel like you have this like magic experience. Is it a matter of just like waiting for like to build the expertise to do that? Or like, why have you waited?
Yeah, largely like we just closed our Series B like a month ago. We want to do it intelligently, right? Like we are now at a point with the company where we are, I don't think I've said this anywhere else, but we are cash flow positive at this point. So now like we have to spend more money, otherwise we're going to have to pay taxes on it. and so like we're looking at like, you know, paid acquisition. It's like, and that's like a legitimate channel if you really do a good job on it. And honestly for us, it's just getting great people to join the team faster that can go and own kind of these various things. And I think some of that, the initial stuff is starting this month on that, but like we don't have any, we're not allergic certainly to going and, deploying capital, you know, for marketing and whatever have you, like we intend to do a lot of it. Yeah, the trick is just doing it intelligently and having really great people that are owning the outcomes of it and, et cetera. And so we're moving as fast as we can without, kind of toppling the Jenga tower.
Yeah. Here's my pitch. Let me design the billboards. I love billboards. I think this actually would go great on a billboard. I feel like this is like such a great message of like very concise, very clear call to action. You could get a lot of people.
Deal. We're talking about billboards actually. So like, yeah, 100% deal. I'm taking you up on that.
I love it.
Don't get him started because he won't end. He's always been pushing for the billboards. I do want to be cautious of our time because I know that we got some hard stops. I wish we had more time to ask more questions. But Eric, every guest we have on, we like to ask two kind of ending questions. First and foremost is, what does your personal tech stack look like? What are you using day in and day out?
Personal tech stack. Okay. Yeah. I think, so is this what tech stack, like computer or like programming or all of it?
Whatever you want to rifle off.
Yeah. Whatever resonates with you as far as what you want to share.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, tech stack. So like I'm a Mac guy for sure. I've got Cursor for like local development. I'm using Cursor. Obviously I'm using Bolt, you know, for prototyping and web-based stuff. And as far as like, so my world web development, so like, this is the Veet logo. Like we are heavy on Veet. We've been heavy on Veet for 4 or 5 years. And now it's like the, you know, one of the top tool chains, you know, for web development. And, yeah, so Veet, I mean, Veet, React are like, you know, my go-to, I would say.
Phenomenal. And we like to end it. And this is a broad statement. So take it as you will. We've kind of got a lot of different responses to it. So it's kind of fun to ask, but what is one thing, I guess, sitting February 19th, what is one thing you hope happens in 2025 and another thing that you hope does not happen in the rest of the year?
I hope we see like a code gen model that's like, you know, two or three times as good as the stuff we're seeing now, or if not more, but like something that's like multiple X, but, and you know, it'd be great to see incremental stuff, but it'd be cool to see multiple X. I hope we don't see something that's like 1,000X though. I think that would be maybe scary. Maybe it'd be great. I don't know. But, I think a lot of progress is good, but maybe too much is, too much at once at least, you know? So I think those would be my two things.
And just a super lightning fast follow-up to this, like, are you seeing those levels of gains from like reasoning models? Like, is that the sort of thread, or like you still think like a coding specific model or like one of the like general purpose capability LLMs will unlock that experience that you need for better coding performance?
I think the reasoning models are good for like certain things like debugging, like when it's, you know, when you get in a jam, right? So we're actually gonna be rolling out, like we're using the new Gemini 2.0 Flash stuff for reasoning on debugging specifically. What haven't noticed a huge thing as far as like general app, like general writing of the software. That's been kind of interesting, and I don't know if that'll change, right? But it definitely, the reasoning is tends to really kick in when you're trying to tease apart like, hey, what is this error? How should we get to the bottom of it? Yeah, I mean, things like that. But yeah, so more of both of those areas, you know, honestly. I'd love to see more and more in both of those arenas.
We'll keep working on it for you, Eric. This was awesome. Thank you for spending the time with us. This was a ton of fun. I think folks should go check out Bolt, bolt.new, super easy domain. Go build stuff that people love. I think the barrier to entry has never been lower. So thanks for chatting with us.
Okay. Thanks for having me on.